So it was 2001. There was the G8 summit in Genoa. So the Italian FBI was like looking for things that might have been a problem. And they found a website. And in this website, there was information stolen from the government. And it's getting interesting. And apparently that guy that got that information was me. I can't say if it was me or not, but there was my email.
Welcome back to the Make or Break show, where each week we bring you stories of incredible makers and the make or break moments that have defined them along the way. I'm your host, Brandon Cullum, and this week we chat with Jacko Whatever, find out how he went from a Silicon Valley startup to YouTuber to product creator. All right, what is up, guys? Welcome back to the show. We've got another fun one for you guys. We're hanging out with Jacko, who is calling in all the way from Italy. He's doing some really cool stuff that we're going to be getting into. But before we do that, as always, I want to let you guys know that our show is brought to you by the wonderful supporters over on Patreon. You guys can find the show on Patreon if you go to patreon.com/makeorbreakshow. You guys get a little bit of an after show where we do a Q&A with our guest. And if you guys are on Patreon, we try to ask your questions first. Also, something kind of fun we did with this one is we actually recorded this one live over on YouTube. There is a YouTube channel under the Make or Break show that's been dormant for a little bit as I've kind of figured out the format here, but I'm going to start trying to do live streams of our recordings the rest of this year. So make sure and follow us over there. And if you guys are on Patreon, we'll try to get your questions asked. So there's a bunch of other rewards, lots of cool things over there. So encourage you to check it out. All right, so getting into this week's episode with Jacko, Jacko's stuff is all over the place. He's got one video that we get into on YouTube that has over 22 million views, which is nuts, but he has an incredible background in software, and he actually has some pretty interesting experience with the Italian government. He may or may not have been a hacker and gotten a job because of that, which is pretty crazy. But you guys might have also seen recently, he had a super successful Kickstarter with the Maker Knife. Actually, Bob Claggett was the voice of the video on his Kickstarter, and Jimmy Dresta has a special version. But it's this really cool utility knife that's super strong, has a really neat release mechanism. And his goal was 10,000 euros, but he wound up actually raising 267,000 euros, which rounds out to about $313,000, which is crazy. So we get into that. We get into his journey into making, and Jacko is just a blast to chat with. So without further ado, let's jump to our interview with Jacko. We're hanging out with Jacko from Jacko Whatever, YouTuber extraordinaire.
Thank you for having me here.
Yeah, man. Product maker, all viral video creator, all things crazy. Would you just like tell people what you do? Like, how do you describe yourself?
Well, I guess the short answer is I'm a YouTuber right now. I make content. Like, I try to entertain people. And I like to make stuff. So I combine, you know, entertainment with my passion. So YouTube was the best way to do it. And here I am being a YouTuber right now.
That's cool. When you first got started, I guess kind of going way back when you were a kid and growing up, was making and building, was that something like you were really into?
Not at all. Actually, I was really bad. No one in my family was like a maker or good at making stuff. My background is actually old computer stuff. So my company, I sold my company like 2 or 3 years ago. And I decided, like, I'm going to take a year off and, you know, I want to do something with my hands, something that I can show people, because the things that I was doing were just, you know, so abstract and, you know, you couldn't touch them. So I really had the need to make something with my hand. And so I started looking, watching a lot of YouTube videos and, you know, being a fan of people that now are my friends. And so I decided to start my YouTube channel as well. And then that, you know, grew and grew, and now it's my startup, basically.
That's cool. So computer background, like, were you programming, building websites? Is that what you went to school for?
Yeah. My company was, like, based in London, but I was working in, you know, the Silicon Valley, San Francisco, and stuff like that. And I was doing, like, my job was not, like, programming. I was, like, basically managing other people to, you know, do different things. And I was actually the first search engine in Italy for a while.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the first pay-per-click in Europe was my company.
Oh, wow. So what brought you to the States then? Was it just to get closer to that whole world? I mean, just feels like, if I'm going to move, like, across the world, that feels like a pretty big jump.
Yeah, it was actually. You know, every company that was going to be serious was based there. So, like, right, just being there, living there, it would mean, you know, go to Starbucks and meet other CEO of, like, huge companies. That's like a huge advantage if you want to do that kind of things. So for me, it was the most natural thing to do, and that's what I did.
So was it your company? I mean, were you
running the show? Yeah, it was my company, yeah. So basically, when I sold it, like, 3 years ago, I could actually retire.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
So that's why for me right now, the Jaco whatever, it's a different identity. Like, it's a company. I don't put money in it. My initial budget was 5,000 euro. And I grew just with, you know, by itself. You know, I just putting back everything that I make. I put it back to the company and try to grow and grow.
So you're full out, like, Silicon Valley, like the TV show, like, startup. Like, is that stereotype, though? Kind of that startup world, all the hustle, all the crazy stuff that goes into it. Is that kind of what you experienced? Like,
I never watched the show, but a lot of things, I saw memes online and stuff like that. It's basically like that. But a lot of people, they go there, they think they are in the show or in the memes, but they don't do really much. Like, right now, it's like a little different. Back in the day, it was like starting from a garage or stuff like that. Those were real things. Now you go there to, like, look for an IPO or, you know, make companies that never do anything, but maybe you sell your team, because the team in the Silicon Valley is like a huge asset to have. If you have, like, good developers, it's like, it can be more like an advantage than your actual product in many cases.
How many people did you have working for you?
When I had, like, the most I had was 23 people.
Jeez. Okay. Gotcha. And you said, so is pay-per-click and SEO just in Europe? That was kind of the product that you were building?
Well, I had many different things, because my, okay, like, the last thing I did was maybe, how can I explain, like, a way to have your house clean in, like, how can I explain it? Basically, a way to have a maid in your house.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
But without hiring one. So it's like what's called maidies.
Yeah.
And then I sold it. That was one of the assets that I sold with my company.
Gotcha. That's cool. So was the plan always to kind of IPO and, like, have an exit? Or was that something you thought you were going to do the rest of your life?
It was not in the beginning, but I kind of had to, because I was really tired. That was, like, a really tough, even though my company was, like, becoming really big, that was, like, kind of a tough moment of my life. I was, like, I wouldn't say depressed, but close to it, kind of, you know, burning out a little bit and being away from home. I guess when you're Italian, it's even harder because you don't have, you know, mama making food for you.
Yeah.
Another stereotype for you. But no, I mean, I'm joking right now, but it became, like, kind of hard for me to be away and, you know, not being able to have a family of mine. And I guess that was the right moment to sell.
So you were in your 20s, is that right? Because are you in your early 30s? Did I see that?
Yeah, 33 I am.
Okay, so you're just a year older than me. How long were you in the States then?
I've never lived in the States because I was living in London. But I was going to San Francisco for 3 months a few. Because it was better for me, for taxes and stuff, to stay in London.
How long were you with your company then? How long were you working with your company?
Well, I started my company when I was 17.
Okay.
So, the start of the company is kind of a story by itself. If you have five minutes, I can tell you.
Yeah.
So it was 2001. There was the G8 summit in Genoa. And so the Italian FBI was looking for things that might have been a problem. And they found a website. And in this website, there was information stolen from the government. And it's getting interesting. And apparently that guy that got that information was me. I can't say if it was me or not, but there was my email.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that gave me a lot of exposure, and it made me start my first company, basically working for big companies and testing their security stuff.
So you were supposedly, mm-hmm. I guess you can't say for real or not, you hacked the Italian government. Mm-hmm. And then it was really easy
back then. I wouldn't be able to do it right now, but it might be that was me.
that's like stuff from the movies. That's crazy. So they flipped your powers for good, it sounds like. To security.
Well, I went to the hospital with panic attacks 6 times in 4 days.
Yeah.
It was really bad, but it turned out to be a huge opportunity for me, and I'm glad that I took it because, there were titles on newspapers and stuff like that. So I used that kind of exposure to build my first company.
That is crazy. Okay, so you go from supposedly hacking your government to building a company because you're a whiz kid, sounds like, with tech in general. So how old or when did you sell? How long ago was that?
I think it was 3 or 4 years ago. Actually, I'm really bad with timing for me.
Okay.
I'm still 15, so.
So that's not long ago.
When I started my YouTube channel, so I don't know how old is my YouTube channel.
Okay, yeah, I'll go. Actually, I'll check the back end of it. But why getting into making then? It sounds like you kind of could have done whatever you wanted. You basically did retire. Why did you go to building?
It was the best thing in that moment for me. My whole life, I've never made something that I could touch. It's even explaining to my parents what I was doing was impossible. They were right. But they wouldn't understand. No one would actually understand what I was doing. And I guess I was always attracted by people that made stuff because I always had a toolbox without really making anything. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I was making RC planes. That was kind of my making experience before that.
Cool. Yeah.
And so, when I moved back to Italy, I got a house and I thought, I'm going to make all my furniture by myself. And I didn't know what I was doing. And the only way for me to learn it was watching YouTube videos like Jimmy D'Aresta, John Hayes was the first ones that I was watching. And then I was I want to do that too. It's so nice because I also had a passion for making videos.
Yeah,
I didn't know why I would make videos. Same thing, making stuff. I have so many furniture that I can make. Then what? So I combined the two passions, and YouTube is the best way to do it.
That's crazy. So I was looking. It looks like your first video was, in January of 2015. Why published to YouTube? in addition to actually creating everything you're making?
That's a really nice question. Like, for me, it was like I was a huge fan of Jimmy DiResta. So actually, you see January, but it was actually a few months after. Like, that video was like unlisted. And then I went to New York for a trip and I went to meet Jimmy DiResta. And I asked him like the permission to start my YouTube channel. And so I showed him my video that was unlisted and he liked it, like literally, like he pushed the button.
That's cool.
So after that, I had like 20 subscribers and I was like, oh my God, I think I'm a YouTuber now. Like, I have a channel, like I have no excuses to procrastinate more. So yeah. From there, I remember I was in Manhattan with my phone and I had 20 subscribers. I don't know who they were. Maybe they're not subscribers anymore. But yeah, I remember that exact moment. I was like, okay, now I'm going to make more movies.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Videos. Yeah.
So did you kind of know then that like you wanted to produce on a consistent basis, or were you still just kind of playing around and then when you had a cool project,
yeah,
you put it up?
Yeah, I was playing around. I think I made like 4 videos, then I didn't do anything for like 6 or 7 months and then started again. It was not like I'm going to do this as a business. It's
right.
Like maybe a year after I decided that that could be my new startup.
What did you have any early projects that you really enjoyed working on?
You mean when I started or like before YouTube?
Maybe once it would be on YouTube.
No, not to my recollect. I can't remember actually.
Yeah, yeah. So what did your shop kind of look like at this point?
Was my basement. Like my first shop. Okay. Yeah. My first shop was my basement. I only had like a bench saw and a few Makita tools and like the super crappy table saw, the Makita table saw.
Yeah, yeah.
That I really hate. It's like a death trap. Sorry to say that. Yeah. I hope you're not sponsored by Makita, but
no, I have no sponsors.
So. Okay. I still have it. I'm looking for SoStop. But anyway, yeah, I only had like these few tools and then I got my first welder. It was like a 200 euro welder that I got from like a local store. And then a few months, like same, you know, I was starting making little money and I moved to a little bigger shop that was like separate to my house. And then I moved to the huge shop that I am now.
Gotcha. Why? Because it seems like you got into doing especially stuff with metal pretty quick. Was that just that whole world? Is that something you've always kind of been interested in outside of just working with wood?
No. Okay. There's a thing about me that I don't know if like anyone can actually relate to, but I think is that I get kind of good to anything in the beginning and then I lose interest. I lose interest. So I'm like, if I work with wood, I get obsessed. I like watch billion videos and I only work with wood for like months. And then I need the next thing. Like I get kind of good. Yeah. I don't get like amazingly good, but I need to change to something else. Like I can't stop learning new things. Like the beginning of learning something is the most exciting thing for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally get it. I'm the same way. I love that. When you first experience something, like I've just came across glass blowing. Like we saw it like live recently. Nice. I'm like, how can I get a forge and how can I get an account? Like how does this whole world work? Like, and that's the really fun part. So
yeah, it's crazy. Like it looks like I'm really good at a lot of things, but actually it's just because I get obsessed with something.
Yeah.
And I learn really quickly, but then I never become like super good. Like I'm never gonna be a super professional person on something specific.
Right.
I'm like pretty much a generalist. Can you say that?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Your stuff may not be like in like fine woodworking.
No.
But it's cool.
I admire people that can do that.
Right.
And I watch a lot of videos and stuff, but yeah, I lose interest.
Yeah.
I can't help it.
Yeah, I think I've heard, so Bob Claggett from I Like Doing Stuff has mentioned he's kind of a generalist. That's how he sees himself too, because it's he's like, I'm not like incredible at any one thing, but like yeah, I can do a lot of different things. So
I can learn quickly, I guess. It's my my luck.
That's cool. And that's what's fun too, is like when, because your projects are super creative, and it's like there's always you find those creative things like in the intersection of like two different mediums or maybe two different processes. That's cool.
Thank you.
So you moved to your big shop, but you mentioned that this started to be a business. So was that, is that money from YouTube? Was that sponsors? Like, when did it kind of be like, oh, this isn't just like a side thing? Like, I could make money from this.
Well, when I decided to move to the big shop, of course, I had like a kind of a large rent to, you know, bills and stuff. They grew quite exponentially. So it had to be a company. Like, I had to decide that that was a company because I need the money to grow and, you know, survive, let's say, in that business. So I needed to change my mind into, this is going to be my next startup. And I made, you know, a plan for years to come, and I'm just following it. I knew pretty quickly that I didn't want to have, as you know, core business or business model. I didn't want to rely on advertisement, because I knew from the beginning that I wanted to sell my own things. And I don't know, I'm just not too much into advertisement, because they tend to tell you what you have to do. And, you know, this month you have like 3 or 4, next month you don't have any.
Right.
Or, you know, it's kind of scary for me. I want to rely on something that I can make and produce myself and sell myself without anyone telling me what my video should be, when they should be released, and things like that.
Yeah. So we'll definitely get into your Kickstarter in a minute. But so has there been products before the Maker Knife that you've like produced and sold?
Yes, there was in the beginning, but I never showed it on my channel because it was not. Basically, it's kind of funny. It's the first time I say it. But I was making, basically, I was buying bags, like beach bags. I don't know what to call it. But anyway, I was like making them custom for customers. Like, my sister has a store, and I was selling those bags through her store. And I actually sold like 400 in a summer.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And so that was like a really nice budget to have. That's actually when I decided to move to the bigger shop, because I had a little bit of buffer to do so.
Yeah, that's cool. So after you got to the bigger shop and your channel's growing, I love to go back into like the analytics of folks' channels. And it was like, what, towards the end of January of 2017, everything just kind of took off, it looks like. And it looks like that was like your fidget spinner video. So for people that don't know, I'll make sure I include a link, but I mean, that thing has over what, 22 million views.
Yeah, something ridiculous like that.
Which is wild. And I guess that was kind of in the middle of the fidget spinner craze too. But what was that like, to seeing something blow up that big, that quick for you?
So it was not an accident. Actually, at that moment, I knew that to grow faster, I needed a viral video.
Yeah.
So I made my research, and that was the time when fidget spinners were popular. So I thought I had like 3 different options, and I started with a fidget spinner. And that first one was actually super viral. So one test and it went pretty well.
Yeah. That thing's nuts.
Because, you know, for my kind of channel, I was like struggling, because everyone that was watching my video, I mean, I wouldn't say everyone, but a lot of people was enjoying my videos, but they were really difficult to find because no one would search for the things that I was making.
Right.
So I needed one viral video to have the exposure to, you know, grow faster.
Yeah.
And that went pretty well. And I actually enjoyed making those Cause I Can videos. I'm going to make more for sure.
Yeah.
But now I went back to making like more build and make stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And with that, you were using, was it the Tormach? Is that right? How you actually machined it?
No, that was a manual mill.
Oh, that was manual. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
So how'd you get into just machining? That seems like a whole nother crazy world.
Yeah, like everything. Watching videos on YouTube.
Okay.
Right now, ignorance is a choice. Like, if you want to learn something, you have all the tools and you don't have to spend any money to learn new things. It's amazing. Like, it's what really excites me, because you can learn anything you want online, and YouTube is the best, you know, way to do it.
Yeah, yeah, that's cool.
So many good people in there.
Yeah. So you mentioned you kind of went back to the build videos. Is that kind of your strategy now? Like, are you intentional with the project you're working on, thinking through, like, this gets views, or is it just the stuff that really interests you?
No. It's always stuff that really interests me. The fidget spinner, I was not interested in fidget spinners, but I was interested in, you know, making that particular fidget spinner that would go super fast.
Right.
That was, like, my interest. Like, I never do things for views. I guess that everyone says that, but I sure try to make it in a way that it would be more appealing. But it's so kind of random that you can never predict that.
So, yeah.
But right now I'm back to making, like, build stuff. Like,
gotcha.
I'm going to make more Cause I Can videos.
Yeah.
But, you know, as long as I have fun and I don't feel like I have to do something because views or numbers, I'm okay.
That's cool. Another thing about your videos, I feel like it's super distinctive, because, like, I just recognize yours, especially when I see a thumbnail, is they're super high contrast. So it seems like your background mm-hmm. is really dark. And I know you had an earlier video that kind of made fun of that, and you were, like, completely mm-hmm. washed out.
Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, you were completely washed out. But has that always been an aesthetic you like, or is that kind of out of necessity? What kind of you had to generate or gone towards that direction?
Well, I always liked super contrasty stuff. And I came to the conclusion not long time ago that basically it's been my whole life, because when I was like 14, 15, or 13 years old, I was like working on my computer at night without, you know, trying not to wake up my parents or stuff like that. So
yeah,
it's always been me in the dark with my work really lit up. So that's, I guess, it's what took me to this kind of style, I think. Because yeah, I really like, you know, working on something that it's really bright and being kind of surrounded by darkness in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
But actually, in real life, it's a lot more bright. Because okay, what I do, I have my work super lit up, and then I raise the exposure.
Gotcha.
I mean, so it's like super contrasty, but in real life, I actually see everything around.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's cool. So moving to your Kickstarter that just finished up a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. And the Maker Knife. And so I'll include a link in the show notes if people haven't checked it out. But you can actually buy it now, even though the Kickstarter's over. Is that right?
Yeah. You can steal from makerknife.com. You can pre-order it at the same pre-order price, and it's going to go, like, as long as people are going to buy it, I'm going to produce them. So
that's cool. So where did the idea come from initially?
So as I said before, I always wanted to base my company on building my own products and selling my own products. So when I thought that the time was right, I hired David Winderstall, which is another amazing YouTuber. And we brainstormed a lot, and we decided to go for one product that was not the Maker Knife. But then it was a little too difficult, and our experience in that stuff was not high enough. You know, producing things like thousands of units is not something I've ever done. So right, we decided to go with something simpler. And that was making a pocket knife, because okay, I was like kind of frustrated with the ones I had, and I wanted to make one that was best suited for me. So we made the Maker Knife. The only idea I had was like the mechanism for the a toolless changing blade. And then we found out other ways to make it interesting.
That's cool. So how were you iterating the design? Like, were you machining this? Were you 3D printing? What was that process like?
Yeah, the first ones were all 3D printed.
Okay.
I think until like prototype 14 was all 3D printed. And then to see if it actually would work in metal, I started prototyping with my Tormach. And we did another, like, I don't know, 5 prototypes. And then we started looking for manufacturing companies and ordering like from anywhere.
Yeah.
Trying to see. Yeah.
That's cool.
To see what was good.
I always feel like, especially with Kickstarter, the manufacturing piece is always the super difficult part. Has that been hard for you to find the right partners? And what's that kind of process like?
It's not hard, but I guess it's, I can say it's expensive, because what you want to do is just ordering from as many people as you can, because they can say they can do something, but then they can't, or they don't do it right. So for me, I don't know, there might be better ways, but for me it was just, you know, ordering from anyone that could make it and having like a lot of different prices, you know, get an idea of what they can do, what they can't. And I guess that's the only way I could do it, because I don't have any, you know, network of developers or stuff like that. I have to build that. So,
Yeah. And one of the coolest parts, at least, especially on the videos, is the like how it pops out and then how you can't push it back in.
Yeah.
Was that you had that idea initially that you wanted to include with it?
Okay. When we started, like, we decided, okay, we're going to make a pocket knife. I had a few things that I wanted the pocket knife to have. And one was, it had to be simple enough that anyone could customize it. In fact, the top plate is just like a flat piece of metal that can be any material you want. And it's actually pretty easy to replicate and make it like out of wood or whatever you want. Then I want it to be easy to use with both hands. So that's when it came like kind of natural to have like something in the middle that it's like the same way both sides. So that's why I made the ring. And then I want it to be really light and easy to use, basically. And then we came out with that idea after like a few different billions of sketches and tries. It was really fun, like stressing, but really fun.
Yeah. So did you always know you were going to have to do a Kickstarter to kind of get that initial, especially in income, to do the tooling and everything with manufacturing?
I don't know. It's, for me, like, of course, I couldn't predict how many I could make. Because if you want to produce something, there's always a problem. Like, you know, to have a price from a manufacturer, you have to give him a number. Like, how many do you want? And of course, the higher is the number, the less it's going to cost a single unit. So it's really hard, especially being the first thing I make. It's really hard to predict what that number is. Like, for me in the beginning was like 100 units. And of course the price was like pretty expensive.
Yeah.
So Kickstarter gives you the opportunity to don't do that estimation and actually be based on an actual number, which is like crazy important for me. You know, it's like, I don't have to like invest a lot of money in something that maybe doesn't sell. Or I don't have to, you know, produce like 100 units and then I have like 6,000 to make. Kickstarter give you this advantage that it's like, for me, it's like something crazy important and really cool.
Yeah. So take us to, you're about to launch the Kickstarter. What was your feeling like? Were you like, is anybody going to buy this? Like, did you have any expectations? Because it was, what, 10,000 euros. That was your goal. Is that right?
Yeah, that was. Okay. So 10,000 euros was actually the right amount for me to don't lose too much. I would be still losing money
right.
with only 10,000 Europe, but I would make, basically I could build the knives without losing money, but all the investment I made, like hiring David and the first prototypes and stuff, would be lost. But for me, it was like the price for me to learn a lot of things about products, production of stuff. So I was okay with 10,000 euro because I really wanted to make that happen.
Got it.
Then when I was ready to launch the Kickstarter, actually, I procrastinated for like a month. Like I was so nervous. I didn't want to know how it would be, like if it was a failure or a success. Like I started finding all kind of excuses to procrastinate the launch. I don't know, right now it's stupid to say, but it was like actually Jimmy saying like, okay, tomorrow you're gonna launch it, because
yeah,
enough, you know. I was like refining the pictures and refining the page, refining everything for like a month, but I could have launched it a month earlier. And then I finally did it, and you know, I filmed the process, and not even 2 hours later, the goal was met, and that was incredible.
That's crazy. How quickly after you launched did that first order come in, or first backer?
Like a minute. I reached the goal before I could publish my video, like the launch video.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was really, really great. I only put like a picture on Instagram, and that, you know, was like ding, 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 all the sounds from the phone, like those amazing notifications. It was really exciting.
That's cool. So it ran for, is it 35 days? Is that how long they do it?
Yeah.
And so looking at it now, you raised over 267,000 euros, which I think is like $330,000. What is that like? In the context of the project, like, are you able to do more because of that? I mean, I know it kind of blew away your expectations, but what's it like now on the backside now it's over?
Yeah, I mean, this amount of money, of course, as I said before, is going to be completely invested back to the company.
Gotcha.
And I have something cool coming up that I can't tell. But one thing I can tell is that I'm hiring a video editor.
Yeah.
And I might have found him. And it's going to be really great because it's going to be, for me, the opportunity to start like going kind of daily, producing videos daily. And that's amazing because right now editing for me is like impossible. Like I have to do too many things, and it's not like I can't do it anymore. Like it takes 2 days to edit one video, but I need those days to produce the knives and, you know, manage the company and the new people. I can't do that. So I'm really excited to have a video editor. And it was actually when I went to Alex Steele that he convinced me that actually giving away that part of the process is actually a really good thing. Because I was like scared because like editing for me, it's part of my identity on YouTube. And I was afraid, you know, that it would change or I wouldn't recognize the final product. But looking how Alex Steele is doing well with his video editor, it really convinced me that it's the best thing to do right now. That's why.
That's cool. So do you have like a timeline when you're trying to get to maybe those daily videos, or is it you just kind of ramping up once you get your new folks in?
I'm thinking that I'm going to ramping up.
Gotcha.
Because it's not going to be possible to make daily videos just yet, but even just two a week, it would be great for now.
That makes sense. Fast forwarding maybe like 5 years down the road from now, do you still see yourself like as a YouTuber, or do you see this as a bigger like media business with a product arm? Kind of where do you see the future of where you're going?
5 years. It's a really long time.
Maybe 2 years, 1 year. What's kind of the direction you're going towards? So, how about that?
It would make sense for me to to answer this question, I would have to tell you something that I can't tell you right now. So,
which you've been hinting at, I feel like, in every video I've watched recently. So I'm looking forward to whenever
that
is.
I'll tell you later. But no, okay. It's a really big thing and a big change for the channel and everything I'm making. So I'm super pumped.
That's cool. That's cool. So maybe another hypothetical question. When you look, say you're completely done making or whatever, you're retired for real, retired, not just retired in your 30s, which is amazing. Do you want to be seen more for the videos you produced or the products you produce? Like, where do you kind of see your legacy in your own eyes?
That's a really nice question. Maybe my product, because it's not me like as an identity, but it's what I made. So, a really nice question, though. I want to think more about it. Maybe it's going to change, but I'm going to say my products.
That's cool. And I imagine it'll be a combo of both once you get there. But the other question I have about the Maker Knife. So you have a special Jimmy Doresta version with his name obviously in it. And it's gold. Was that something you knew? Like, did he want to, like, when you're working through the process, was it like, hey, make my own version? Or kind of how did that work?
He's been a great supporter of this project because I was sending him pictures of every like different iteration. So for me, it was like I had to give him something back.
Yeah.
And the best way that I could think of it was making a Doresta version of it. And of course, he said, sure, I'm super happy to do it. So I'm super honored to have like his name in one of my products. So,
yeah. Would you ever have imagined going all the way back to Manhattan when he liked your first video and you got 20 subscribers that you would be building like a custom Jimmy Doresta knife with all these backers on Kickstarter?
That's crazy. Like, Jimmy is one of my closest friend now. Yeah. And it's crazy because I'm still like a fanboy. Like, I watch every video he makes and, I'm an actual fanboy, but being able to, talk to him as a friend and, drive around with him, it's like still crazy for me. Like, I can't imagine. Like, he's really the best person I ever met, for real. Like, he's so genuine and everything he makes is so, I'm fanboying out, as you can see, but I'm a huge fan of Jimmy, so.
Yeah, he's awesome. I had him on the show several months ago, and he was like, "Yeah, man, totally." Like, I was like, "There's no way he's gonna even respond to this email." And he's like, "Whatever." So he's nice.
Says yes to everything.
And I feel like everyone says that who meets him. So he's just that way, which is cool. Well, I appreciate your time and jumping on, Colin, all the way from Italy.
Thank you.
I think you're just the second, maybe third European. So we've had Laura and we've had Alec on.
Nice,
but. For people that aren't familiar with your stuff, so makerknife.com for the Maker Knife, and then just Jaco Whatever. Is that the best places you'd send people?
Yeah, if you search for Jaco Whatever, you'll find everything, I guess I do. But YouTube is where I do most of my things, and Instagram maybe.
Got it. Well, sweet man. Well, thank you so much. It was a blast chatting.
Thank you. Wow. The time went really fast.
All right, thanks for hanging around to the end. This is where I give you guys a quick update about the things I've got going on in my own shop. If you guys did not know, I have a completely separate YouTube channel called the Make or Break Shop that I want to encourage you guys to check out. My goal, I just actually set some Q3 goals, and one of the big ones is to post way more often over there. I love producing videos, and I love doing projects, and so there's going to be a lot more coming at you guys. And speaking of that, a video I'm working on this week is how to basically create a sign with a CNC. And it's really setting up more of a sign business. So I've been working on some football stadium designs, and I've been putting those out, selling them on Etsy. I'm going to be doing some in-person shows as well as a bunch of things. But this is kind of the process on how to make a sign, especially using one of like the Shapeoko or X-Carbon machines. Just some tips and tricks I've learned because I've got a huge pile of signs that I have messed up. And so maybe you guys can learn from my experience. Got some other cool projects that are coming down the pipe here really soon, as well as I am hopefully going to be putting together some training over on Fusion 360. So I know a lot of you guys potentially use SketchUp, but Fusion really has been getting popular here recently. And I would love to kind of walk you guys through some of the things that I've learned specifically for making and woodworking. Might do some CNC stuff and like CAM paths, but just the ability to do a really nice mock-up and get a really nice render, I found super useful, as well as you can create plans. And Fusion is just pretty crazy once you get into it. So if that is something you guys would be interested in, let me know. As always, you guys can hit me up over on Instagram at the Make or Break Shop. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, we actually did this one live. And so I will be announcing when we're going live with new interviews over there on Instagram, as well as actually on YouTube. So you can check out the Make or Break Show on YouTube. We've got some fun guests. Actually, we're recording a good bit next week. So be sure and check it out. And until next time, go make or break something in your shop. See you guys.